From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. And on this day, a Waterville resident deported to Haiti, and an oral history project in Medway that's bringing older residents and school kids closer and helping get the budget passed. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
A Waterville man arrested by immigration officials in January and held in a New Hampshire jail for nearly 2 months has been deported to Haiti. He leaves behind a pregnant wife and two young sons and an attorney who says he fears for his client's safety. Susan Sharon has that story.
A native of Haiti, Lexis St. Martin, came to the United States as a refugee at the age of 11. His attorney, Evan Fisher, says he has no friends or family there. His father and brother have become U.S. citizens. His brother now works as a police officer in Florida. But St. Martin never established citizenship, and a 2008 conviction for trafficking cocaine in Maine made him a target for immigration and customs enforcement, even though he completed a 7-month jail sentence a decade ago. Fisher says St. Martin arrived in Haiti on Tuesday.
He has no ID. He has no Haitian ID or passport, and his Maine driver's license was taken from him at the airport by customs officials. So he has no identification, nowhere to live. He's homeless in Haiti, and that's something he's described as worse than being in jail.
Fisher had filed a lawsuit alleging that St. Martin's due process rights were violated when he was held indefinitely in detention. He's also asked for help from members of Maine's congressional delegation, who could draft a private bill that could help bring St. Martin back to Maine. Fisher says St. Martin's wife, Mindy, who's expecting their third child in May, is devastated that her husband has been deported. He owned a cleaning business and was the family's only source of income.
My sister and Lexius bought a house this past year, so finances are, there's none really.
John Reynolds is Mindy's brother, who attended a Portland rally in support of immigration reform on Wednesday.
She's lucky enough that we can, you know, take them in for the meantime while she either rents her house out or sells it, because she's going to be with a husband regardless. Can't let this break them up.
Reynolds was also among dozens of people who turned out for a Waterville rally in support of Lexis St. Martin earlier this month. Family members describe him as a friendly, hard-working man who's turned his life around. But being thrust into Haiti, a country that is struggling with natural disasters, civil unrest, and systemic poverty, is not going to be easy for him, says Evan Fisher.
I can only imagine that Lexius being displaced there with no ID and no support system is going to have a very hard time. So I'm really concerned about him and his safety and just how he's going to get by.
Fisher says he hasn't been able to speak with St. Martin himself. His client doesn't have a phone. In fact, the only way the family was able to confirm that he'd been deported was when Lexis called them, using a phone he borrowed from someone in Haiti. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
A student who was recently enrolled at York County Community College was arrested in his home state of Vermont last week after threatening a mass shooting at his former high school. According to Vermont police, 18-year-old Jack Sawyer attended a residential school near Belfast for troubled teens. As Patty White reports, York County Community College officials say they have no indication that anyone was at risk while Sawyer was a student.
It was last Wednesday when the Fairhaven Police Department in Vermont was first notified that Jack Sawyer was making threats against Fairhaven Union High School, where he had been a student. But Chief William Humphrey says it was a follow-up tip from a friend that led to his arrest. The two had spent time together at Ironwood, a residential treatment school in Maine for teens with emotional and behavioral disorders. Humphrey says Sawyer had texted the friend about the school shooting in Florida.
He had told her that he had been plotting to do the same for the last two years at the Fairhaven High School. He said that he had no problem with doing it, that he wouldn't really have any remorse, that he didn't want to work I'll change the word, who didn't want to work in a crappy job the rest of his life. He didn't want to pay mortgage or pay rent, so I would no problem ending it early.
Sawyer had also purchased a gun. During an arraignment in court last week, Sawyer pleaded not guilty to several charges, including attempted murder. He's currently being held without bail. Until recently, Sawyer was taking a class at York County Community College. President Barbara Finkelstein says he withdrew earlier this month. After the news of his arrest, Finkelstein sent a letter to the school community saying there was no indication anyone was ever at risk while Sawyer was a student, and emphasized that safety and security are an ongoing priority.
We've always been very vigilant. We have an active emergency response team that does practice drills all the time at the college. We have a number of security protocols in place at the college.
Both Finkelstein and Vermont police credit the tips from Sawyer's friends for averting violence and saying it's a good reminder that if you see something suspicious, say something. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
A special legislative committee is closer to creating a new bill to regulate recreational marijuana for adults in Maine. Lawmakers on the panel hope the proposal will get enough support to become law, but Steve Missler reports there is already grumbling that it concedes too much to Republican Governor Paul LePage, who opposes marijuana legalization.
The Marijuana Implementation Committee has taken several straw votes that significantly overhaul the law approved by voters in 2016. The changes include cutting in half the number of flowering plants that can be grown for personal use. That's down from 6 to 3. It also eliminates cannabis social clubs, and it requires cities and towns to take affirmative action to allow cultivation, wholesaling, and retail operations. The committee also reversed course on a provision that would have shared tax revenue from cannabis sales with cities and towns. It was opposed by LePage and some other Republicans who worried it would spur availability of a substance still outlawed by the federal government. The committee also voted to move oversight of Maine's medical program from the Department of Health and Human Services to the same agency that oversees state finances and tax collection. Republican Senator Roger Cates said consolidating oversight of the medical program and the recreational one was more efficient.
Having these two programs, the licensing, regulation, and enforcement in two separate departments of government just doesn't make any sense. If we were starting from scratch, we would never build a system that way.
But the provision also worries advocates of the medical cannabis program, who argue that the finance agency doesn't have the expertise to deal with patient privacy or a substance used as medicine by some. The committee is expected to vote on the tax framework and final outline of the bill on Friday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And finally today, over the next few months, towns across Maine will vote on local school budgets. It's a process that can turn divisive as costs rise and older residents on fixed incomes feel the pinch. But in the small town of Medway near Millinocket, there's an effort to bring some of those older people into the classroom and make them part of the school community. Robbie Feinberg has more.
So where exactly is Medway?
Medway is, I heard someone describe it as this little pocket of people in the middle of the woods.
That's Medway Middle School teacher Alyssa Dickinson. She is deeply proud of her town, which sits at the confluence of the east and west branches of the Penobscot River.
We're not really near anything. We have to go at least a half an hour to find a Walmart. But we're a very close-knit community. Everybody knows everybody.
She says people in town support the schools, but when it comes time to vote on a budget, she says older residents can have a hard time understanding why education might cost so much money.
In our school in particular, we have an enrollment right now of about 112. That's not a lot of kids. So when you look at a budget, they're going, well, we're only educating 112 kids. What is costing this amount of money?
This disconnect isn't unique to Medway. Particularly in the past few years, local school budgets have skyrocketed in many Maine towns. According to the Maine Department of Education, local school taxes increased by 30% from 2005 to 2015. And when schools are forced to ask for more money from taxpayers, it can get ugly. In the past few years, some Maine towns have repeatedly voted down school budgets after contentious meetings. Catherine Biddle, a University of Maine professor who studies rural education, says many schools haven't really been focused on community outreach. She says over the past few decades, many have largely prioritized student achievement to comply with federal policies.
Then the only interaction between the school and the older adult community becomes, you know, town meetings where the budget is being discussed. And so I think that reinforces the notion that people aren't that invested, but then there's also very little outreach that's being offered.
But that's where Medway teacher Alyssa Dickinson saw an opportunity. Dickinson says after taking a class on rural education, she began to think about local history and how to connect students more closely with their community and its older residents. After dozens of interviews, she designed a solution inside her classroom. She wanted her students to create their own town historical society based in an old, dilapidated Medway church. And to do it, she envisioned turning the class over to some of the town's older residents.
That building that you said burned down, why didn't they rebuild it?
I have no idea. I have a map here.
Now, every other week, about a half dozen Medway elders come into the middle school. Each mentor works with a group of students and digs into a different part of Medway's history. On this day, residents Robert Pelkey and Glendora Coombs flip through old maps and news clippings. They tell the students about Medway's old one-room schoolhouses.
I think it's good to remember the old days and where we came from and maybe how difficult it was and everything. And
I think the children get more out of it than their parents do, really. Mm-hmm. They seem to be more interested.
They do.
In just a few years, this historical society has slowly taken shape. Students say they've recorded interviews with elders and constructed a timeline of the town's history on a giant slab of timber and presented it all back to the town. The goal is to eventually renovate the town's old church and use it as a museum to showcase the history that students have uncovered. Eighth grader Carson Bernier says this work has made him invested in school.
After we're done, I want the kids younger than us to keep this thing going. So when I'm older, I want to know that, like, people still remember what the church was there for and what it was put there for.
And teacher Alyssa Dickinson says she's starting to see the community's perspective change, too. For one thing, Dickinson says this year's school budget passed easily, which isn't the norm in rural Maine. And Dickinson also points to what happened at Medway's latest town meeting. The town was asking for a lot of money, probably tens of thousands of dollars, to fix the old church. It was a big ask for Medway's older residents. Dickinson was ready for it to get shot down. And it was clearly raising a lot of questions from the audience.
And all kinds of hands went up, and I thought, oh no, they're going to say no. But as people started talking, they were not talking negatively, and they weren't talking about not spending money on the church.
Instead, she says, the residents just wanted to know how much renovation would cost. They wanted to see reports before they'd approve it. It was a conversation that Dickinson says she couldn't have even imagined a few years ago.
I can't say for sure that our group affected that change, but I feel like we might have brought the conversation to the forefront a little more than it would have been if nobody had any interest in doing anything with the church but having it sit there. And I think having kids involved makes them see that it's so important to preserve it.
Talks about budgets and local taxes will never be easy. But Alyssa Dickinson hopes that her students' historical society can keep changing the conversation for at least another year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.